Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, 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 we are. Yes. We're here to talk about football, sports-related things.
Yeah.
And then things taking place in football arenas. You know, a lot of football-related content this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Honestly, I think we do this every year where both of us are like, yeah, we don't like football. We never watch. We don't understand what's happening, but we're forced to talk about this big old game.
Yes.
Did you even watch it or you're
no.
just, yeah, I'm happy for you. We, we had people over and turned it on and it was so boring and I just never have a good time. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, but look at you, socialite, social queen.
I know.
Just like
it's my cousin, so it like barely counts, you know.
You have cousins who live in California?
Yeah, I have one cousin. He's cool.
Okay.
And his wife's cool, so we hang out. It's nice to have him around. They're very cool people. So she actually worked on a couple Super Bowl commercials because she's like a I don't know the technical term, but she's like a food set designer. Like a food, like, you know how there's
like food, a food like, stylist.
Yeah. Like a food stylist. And so she did the Dunkin' Donuts and the Starbucks. So
she does coffee.
Well, no, I mean, it just, that's what a lot of
she involved with the Dunkin' Donut product placement in Challengers.
No.
Was she
they're separate. She's not high. She doesn't work for Dunkin'. She works for a food stylist, like, you know, contractor, and then they assign her jobs.
Okay.
So she got the Dunkin' Donuts Super Bowl ad.
Gotcha.
So she got to, I probably should have checked if I could even like tell these stories. I don't know. They're not juicy, but she got to like interact with Jeremy Strong and he's a weirdo, so you were here first.
Oh yes, I did see that commercial where he's like in the dressed as coffee or whatever. Fascinating.
Yeah, he's soaking in the beans because he's method.
I interviewed Antonio Banderas because he was in a Super Bowl commercial. So that's
why you interviewed him. It's not because he's in Paddington 3.
Well. Yes, technically, I interviewed him because of this this Super Bowl commercial.
Antonio.
The thing that's like crazy with celebrities is that they'll give you interviews tied to like weird products they're hawking sometimes, and then you just like sort of have to mention the product in the email, in the piece, but you can talk about whatever else you want. Or sometimes they have sometimes they have parameters on what they can discuss. But with him, it was like, oh yeah, like just talk about whatever movies you want. And I hadn't even seen Paddington in Peru yet. So although I saw it this weekend, so I didn't ask him any questions really about that. I was asking him about Baby Girl and about kids, and then great. But no, the Super Bowl, I feel like in general, boring sports, boo, we don't care about that.
Chiefs, blah.
And it's like whatever. I can't be Taylor Swift. And then this year I was sort of like Kendrick Lamar, I like as like a figure. I don't know his music super well. I know like the same two songs that probably everybody knows. So I was not necessarily like this wasn't like a Beyonce Lady Gaga year where I'm sort of like, okay, I will be sitting down and watching this live. I was I'll watch the Kendrick thing later. Well, however, I feel like no one told me until after the fact that somehow or another, this football game had been like revamped into a Democrats versus Republicans showdown with the Philadelphia Eagles representing the liberals of America and the Kansas City team representing the Trumpers. Because yeah. once I sort of got dialed into that after the game was over, I was like, well, wait,
like, wow, had I drama. Known,
I would have been a massive Philadelphia Eagles fan.
It's giving Broadway.
Because I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but also just like, yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the sequence of events is, number one, there's Trumpy people on the Kansas City team to begin with, mainly Patrick Mahomes' wife and him and his family, and then maybe sort of the Kelce crew, and that... When Donald Trump announced that he was going to go to the Super Bowl, the Kansas City people were, or like, Taylor Swift's boyfriend was like, oh, wow, it's a great honor to play in front of him. And then the Mahomes were obviously excited. And so then Trump was sort of rooting for the Kansas City team because of that, where the Philadelphia Eagles, their quarterback sort of was like, not too thrilled about having Trump there. And so, yeah, then we basically got this showdown where Trump wanted one team to win, and therefore all of the liberal people are rooting for this other team, even though they don't care about the Philadelphia Eagles in general.
Yeah, simplification, but yeah.
And
I mean,
then,
yes, that's true, yeah. but not the only reason people wanted the Eagles to win.
Well, yes. I mean,
the Chiefs
there are
have been like dominating, and it's like, oh,
the
did they deserve to be there? And they like an underdog, and Chiefs have won too much and blah, 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 blah.
And we don't
blah,
like Taylor blah. Swift, so there's that also.
Yeah.
You know, our billionaire corporate soul. So, yeah. And then on top of that all, Kendrick Lamar has a very political halftime show that's basically like giving a finger to Trump, to Drake, to, you know, various other people, and brings out Serena Williams to do a dance that was a callback to a moment that she had like 15 years ago at a tennis final. A lot of hidden messages.
Well, and she dated Drake.
Oh, yeah.
And so... She's like dancing on his
Which,
grave.
When was
he
that?
Sings about him being a pedo. Oh, I don't know. Like, I remember it vaguely. I have no idea time anymore. Probably like a decade ago. I don't know. 2015, maybe?
Yeah. I only knew two songs that Kendrick Lamar performed during the halftime show. One being the Black Panther song, and the other one being the song that he just won the Grammys for. So embarrassing for me. I also couldn't.
You didn't
understand.
Know "Sit Down, Be Humble."
I don't think so.
Oh wow. Okay. Okay.
And then, then I also couldn't understand like 90% of what he was saying. So I feel like a lot of the message was lost on me. But I was there for the vibes, you know. And once people online were like, "Oh yeah, this is a diss to Trump," I was like, "Okay, great. I can't understand it, but I'm here for it." 10 out of 10.
Yeah, no. I mean, as always, he's always. I mean, he's a poet laureate, right? Like, he won a Pulitzer. Like, he's very aware of the details and the platform and all of that. So he like really gives in not just a performance but a message, and I respect that. I mean, he changed a few lyrics to like really drive the point home. I think his first song was actually an unreleased song. Like, it wasn't. He didn't play a lot of his hits, and he didn't, you know, kind of. You know, because it's like you have Lady Gaga, she's doing her best of, and you know, J-Lo is doing a medley. Like, he was very intentional with what songs he chose and the lyrics he highlighted and the visuals. So yeah, he put on quite a show, and I think it is kind of telling. One, obviously people don't have to like it, right? Like, it's like you don't have to think it was your favorite ever. But there is a line of like ick where some of these people are like, oh my God, get out of here. Like, don't bring politics on this. And
well,
it's like, or it's crazy. Like white people who are like, oh man, that was so boring. Like, where was the performance? It was just so bland. And it's like, well, it just went over your head. Like, it wasn't for you. Like, the message wasn't there for you.
Like, I don't know how you could watch this and think it was bland. Like, did I know what was going on? Absolutely not. But there was a lot of, there was dancers, there were people moving around. Like, he was moving around to these different parts of the stage. There was a lot of sort of choreographed elements. I feel like we have seen a number of Super Bowl shows in the past that have been very boring from a, like, maybe you know the songs, but, like, Justin Timberlake, The Weeknd, like, we're not necessarily doing a lot. And then not to mention all of those years where it was like The Who and Tom Petty and, you know, whatever, like, boring people.
A couple I saw on Bachelor Reddit where, like, a couple, like Tyler Cameron, the hot one, he said, ugh, worst Super Bowl halftime show ever. And it was like, that it gave a ton of people the ick. It was like, oh no, our favorite, he's just like a loser now. And then same with Jason Tardik, who's, you know, been in the news a little bit. He was like, I think this is the worst Super Bowl ever, the game and the halftime show. And it's like, so it is interesting how it is kind of a division. I don't know if it's pure party lines. I don't know if it can just be, you know, ignorance, race, all of it woven together to separate those with taste from those without. But it is interesting to see it so politicized, which I think is fair when we live in such a politicized time. So
this has been like a, I saw a tweet that was like, between the Grammys and the Super Bowl, like, this is the timeline where Kamala Harris won. And I do sort of, I do feel like as a pop culture phenomenon, we are like moving in a good direction, or like lots of good things are happening. The Grammys were great. The Super Bowl was, you know, lots of good stuff going on. Also, another thing to discuss, a lot of the sort of Oscar precursor awards were this weekend. And so the Directors Guild and the Producers Guild both gave, and Critics Choice all gave their best picture to Anora. And I thought, sure, since some of those voting was like going before the Emilia Perez stuff happened, that one of them would at least go for that. But I feel like, okay, this, like, Anora did really well. It seems like that's most likely to win Best Picture now. And I'm like, love Anora. So very happy with that outcome of all of the potential options. So yeah, it feels like the country may be headed in a shitty direction. But as people with taste in media, things seem to be working okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's what happens when you actually utilize DEI initiatives to get actual experts into these positions where you can actually trust them to care about what they're talking about. Because I saw this article after the Grammys that was like, oh yeah, they've like quadrupled their size across DEI metrics, like the Latinos, Black, everyone's like suddenly doubled up, like their original part of the voting body. There's a ton of new younger people in the Grammys especially. And so when you compare like how this year went versus like the year when that piece came out that was like anonymous conversations with Grammy voters and they're like, I don't even listen to it. It's like, yeah, there's sort of proof that when people are invested in these pieces, like the truth comes out and people are allowed to kind of prove that there's good work out there and it's worth celebrating. And I think that's culturally what we should be recognizing. So it's unfortunate that there's such a target on, I mean, DEI just as a buzzword for anti-racism. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I hope that those sort of, pop culture-y social constructs continue to like really promote and support the efforts that have been made thus far, just so that that can continue to reflect like the reality of our country. So
I mean, there definitely is a galvanization, I think, that happens when you're up against something as negative as the Trump administration, where there is sort of like a rallying around things, I think, in a way that we haven't necessarily seen. And people are like, I think making an effort to sort of like go the extra mile in the good direction.
Heck yeah. You calling your reps, man, every day, telling them they're doing a good job, telling them not to, you calling them? I'll send you some scripts.
I mean, I am not, but Matthew, I live in New York. What am I supposed to be doing?
You know what? This is my platform.
Okay.
Just because you live in a liberal city or a liberal state or whatever doesn't mean that you can just phone it in. Okay. Because it's all hands on deck. There's a lot happening. And if they don't know what to care about and what to stand for, then they'll just phone it in too. So this is a plea to remember to call your reps every day about something you care about. And 5calls.org or Emily in your phone always has great scripts and guidelines on what exactly is happening and what it costs. Plus, you want to tell them you actually like what they're doing, because a lot of these Democrats are skewing a little bit more conservative these days.
I guess that's true. I'm just, you know, I'll call AOC and tell her what I feel.
Is she your rep? Do you know who your do you know who
I
your
actually
rep
think
is?
She's not currently.
I don't think so.
I'm like, who is what? Like, I know
this
the
is
senator.
A learning moment. This is a learning moment. Who is you should have them saved in your phone. You just call, you leave a quick message, a yes or no type of checkbox situation. Boom, boom, boom. Civic duty done.
Okay. Well, so, you heard it here first, everybody.
Thank you. I hope I've reiterated it.
Okay. What other stories do you have? I really have.
Okay. Well, I mean, circling back to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I mean, so a few things. One, commercials were lame. Hated them. You saw a lot of AI influence in that, and a lot of weird, like, gross body stuff. Like, there was, like, multiple commercials that featured hair flying off of people's faces, like, be it eyebrows or mustaches. Huh, and I was okay. Like, why? Why is that the trend? A tongue flew out of a person's mouth for, like, Gatorade or something. Like, a
like
whole
in
tongue.
In a gross way
flying
or, like,
around,
in a cartoony
like,
way?
No, not cartoony. Not cartoony. Very, very physically realistic. I mean, not blood. It wasn't, like, gore, but it was, like, a human tongue starts flying through space for some reason. I don't know why. And yeah, just a lot of boring concepts, a lot of like on the nose sort of like, oh, Harrison Ford is promoting, I don't know, Honda or something, even though his name is Ford. Like, it's like, okay, thank you. Proof that the marketing and agency world really needs to trust people think better than AI generating ideas. And then the sad Travis Kelce of it all. Oh, boo, so sad. He's so sad coming off the game. But no real appearance by Taylor Swift. I mean, they showed her once.
She was
but then
booed.
Because her team was losing so bad, they never really showed her again. But she was there with Ice Spice. No Blake Lively in sight.
I'm fascinated by the Ice Spice of it all. I'm shocked that that woman is still hanging out with Taylor Swift. But you know what?
I mean, maybe you wouldn't be shocked, because I think Ice Spice had sort of a little social snafu where she did something where people are like, ugh, Ice Spice, like, such a fake, like, not one of the people type thing. So,
oh, is she a Republican?
Birds of a feather. I don't remember. I don't remember the exact. I think she had, like, bad blood with someone else. And everyone's on the someone else's side.
Oh, okay.
In summation.
I mean, anybody who, with the exception of Haim, who I'm sort of a little bit like, girls, get it together. I feel like everybody who hangs out with Taylor Swift is bad vibes. And even Haim, I'm sort of like,
besties.
You guys, we gotta be like, I need new music from you, and stop hanging out with Taylor Swift and start making some new music, maybe, huh? Huh? How about that?
Yeah. Well, people are starting to think, I don't know how far spread this is, but on the Taylor Swift Reddit, they're like, oh no, the T chain is cursed because she wore it again to the game. You know, from the Grammys, the little thigh chain she wore. She wore it as a necklace to the Super Bowl. And it's like, she lost the Grammys. She never won a single Grammy. And now her boyfriend lost his three-peat ring. Like, so they're going to blame it on the chain. I don't know. You know, the interesting thing is, like, is Taylor going to dump this loser now? Like, he he didn't keep up with the promised national domination. You know, it's like, do you think she got the ick from seeing him fail that hard? You know,
I mean, I feel like if the issue is like that she doesn't want to date losers and then she dumps him fairly shortly after, that's like a bad look for her.
Yeah, but do you think it's like she's like writing it off now? Like, it's like she'll wait to save face, but do you think they'll overcome this?
I mean, I don't know, because I found him so annoying when he won last time. So the fact that really she's been with him this long is like as such a red flag for me. He seems like such a dud of a human being. And the fact that she's like hanging out with, what's her, Brittany Mahomes. And stuff, it's like Brittany there's Mahomes. Just a lot of losers swirling around her. And yeah, she's just bad vibes. Such bad vibes.
Supposedly, there were a few like insiders reporting that she's distancing herself from Blake Lively because she didn't appreciate being called a dragon.
Yes, I did hear
which
that
I don't as buy well. As much as Tree. I feel like Tree is usually the source in People, and People released an article that was like, of course they're still friends, but Taylor wants this to play out in courts. She doesn't want to be a part of this. She has no relevancy to the case and refuses to acknowledge it. And so I don't know. Well, I don't know if they're just laying low to like keep the headlines out from mixing their names again so that they don't run a piece about Blake Lively out with her dragon Taylor's. But maybe that too gave Taylor the ick, and she's like, you know what? I'm nobody's dragon. I am Khaleesi or nothing.
I guess so. Yeah, I just don't love this. Like,
I know.
I find know, her aggravating. And
well, the Critics' Choice had a Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni joke I saw.
Yes, I did see that. Chelsea Handler, you know, down to go to really do whatever. Go to the ends of the earth. She also chugged a glass of milk in the middle of that. The Critics' Choice winners, I thought, were better than usual. I feel like in at least the last year when I voted on it, the winners were very like straightforward by the book, and maybe it has to do with the fact that this year's Oscar race is so topsy-turvy that we got more fun winners. But like, Challengers won both editing and best score, which I loved. Anora won overall. I think they just had some fun.
Did your favorites get a lot? Winners. Did your vote count?
Well, I mean, I voted for Challengers, and I think I probably voted for Anora, so.
Cute.
Challengers wasn't nominated for Best Picture in that award ceremony. I know.
Did you get to go?
No. How do you get invited? I get invited. I could go if I wanted to, but they're in LA, so I didn't go. And then also they were at a different day, but then the fires, you know, sort of caused an issue. So
Matthew, I'm in LA. Matthew.
Yeah, but you're not in the Critics' Choice Association, Shelby.
You could get a plus one, right? Can't you get a plus one?
I actually don't think you do. I think you just go. I think there's a section like in the back where it's just like all of the voters, like if you get a thing. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I can just pretend to be you. I think I could do it.
Really?
I'll get a wig.
Mm.
And. Mm-hmm. I'll wear flannels and I'll get one of those tote bags finally, and they won't be able to deny
me. You don't have a tote bag?
No.
What are you using?
I use like a crossbody bag.
Okay. Weird.
So. No.
Odd choice. Very anti-New Yorker of you.
No, a tote bag is not good for your shoulders. It's not functional. It's annoying. You're literally lugging it around.
There's not that much in it.
Well, okay, like, but you're lugging it. It's hop, it's bouncing on your hip. It's like, okay, I have this giant bag with nothing in it. What am I doing with that? You know? Also, mean, okay.
It, but it's not like okay. I'm I'm hiking with like 80 pounds of cookware.
Well, I know, but it's like, but I'm saying, why would you have a big bag if you don't have anything in it? So then I'm just carrying this empty bag.
Well, because I have to have a, because I'm carrying a book. I'm carrying a book.
Yeah, okay. Well, the other thing is that I have to be prepared to pick up a toddler at any moment. Well, right,
yes.
So I just don't think a tote bag's really feasible for that lifestyle. So okay, well, thank you for the mom shaming.
That's your own issue. That's your own
absolutely disrespectful.
Maybe you shouldn't have had a kid if you couldn't carry a tote bag. Ever think about that?
Yeah. That's true. I really messed that up. I didn't put that in my pros and cons list.
I mean, is there anything else to talk about? I feel like that was basically all the news.
No, that's it. Okay. Honestly.
Okay. Love it or hate it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Do I have anything? No. I feel like, here's the thing. I had some free time Thursday. I had some free time Friday. And I was like, okay, great. I'm going to go see a movie. But I did not find it in myself to get any sort of interest in Hard Eyes, even though I saw that it did pretty well. Like, it's pretty well reviewed, pretty accepted. It's just not my kind of movie. The Love One, Love Hurts or whatever, looks terrible, like 15% right now.
Bad.
And then all the Oscar stuff is impossible to find. And I was reading an article today that was like an op-ed in, I don't know, Hollywood Reporter or something, that was like, yeah, it's impossible to find these Oscar movies because they do these stupid like rollout things and they're only in there for a couple of weeks and then they just go to view on demand. And I don't want to spend $20 to watch it on my bad TV. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's my hate it. I'm sick of the culture we've created where instead of extended theatrical runs, they just send it to at home, not streaming. And so like to watch The Substance, I had to get Mubi. I've never heard of the app Mubi. I don't really? Even know what it's for, but it's the only Mubi. Tubi I've heard of.
Oh my gosh. Mubi, no, Mubi I've never heard of. Mubi is a great app. Let me tell you about Mubi. Oh my this gosh. Is my sales pitch. Okay. So Mubi One has the best theme song. Like the best, the Mubi opener of like whenever a Mubi plays in theaters. Great. Iconic.
Wait, what? Is Mubi a production company?
Yes. Yes. Mubi is a production company and they also have distribution. And it's very, it's like cool, like filmy kind of people. So I think it's British, I want to say. So there's, so like How to Have Sex, I think was a Mubi.
Yeah, that was on there. The only two names I recognized.
But like, but so they have some of their own stuff. And then they also just, have, you know, like any other streaming service, they get things to be put on there, but it's always kind of like artsy things. It's a lot of international stuff. Like I'm looking right now and they have Perfect Days, they have After Sun, they have Portrait of a Lady on Fire, they randomly have The Godfather.
They don't have any 2024 titles except Drive The Substance, so I couldn't do any more homework.
Oh, they don't have so any for me of the
personally
other
it
ones?
Wasn't great. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me look and see what they have from 2024 on here. Shall I?
Well, I'll just continue ranting for a little bit.
Well, The Girl with the Needle. That was not
that wasn't on your list of things I should watch, though.
Because I didn't like it that much. But it is on here. So, ever think about that? Not really finding a lot of other things.
It's like, it's like The Brutalist is only showing at 8 p.m. and it's a 4-hour movie. So it's like, I can't do that feasibly.
Yeah, what do you have left to see?
Split it into three parts. And then it's like September 5. I didn't even see that come to theaters. It's like in and out. Whoops, missed it. Sing Sing, missed. All We Imagine Is Light, not showing anywhere. The Outrun, I thought was streaming, but it isn't anymore, if it ever was. Oh. And it's just like random stuff. Like it's just like if
I thought Sing Sing was back in theaters. Is that not?
I think it did. I think it came in and out, but it's just like not national. Like it's not every theater, you know? Mm-hmm. And so AMC is like, oh, I guess we'll do 20 showtimes for Love Hurts. That's new. And we'll just forget about these little ones. And I get why they do it, like, you know, whatever. But it's also like, there's absolutely no way that those are all filled up. So like, just leave the arty ones a little bit longer, especially around award season, so that word of mouth can like build up and someone like me can go and enjoy it in theaters. And it's just not working out for me this year. And so I'm resentful of that. And that's my spiel.
I'm like, they seem to be playing here. Did you see I'm Still Here? That's in theaters.
No.
In New York, at least, at the AMC. It always is confusing to me, though, when there's Oscar movies that are hard to find, because it's like, this is the period where theoretically most people are looking to watch them. Like, right now, lots of people are at the very least trying to watch all the Best Picture nominees, but are like, you know, watching Oscar movies because the Oscars are coming up. And there's every year, I mean, there's stuff like you're saying where there's movies that aren't, you know, that are kind of hard to find or whatever, but at least they're available on video on demand if you want to spend $20 for them. But then there's some movies that just are not even out yet. And I'm like, get your rear in gear and get this in a theater or something, because now is the period where somebody is going to want to watch this random like documentary from Azerbaijan. Like, come April, no one is going to care. And I don't understand why they don't get on that. I only have a couple of Oscar movies left to watch, and then the shorts, which I think just hit theaters this past weekend. So I'm going to go and watch them this weekend. My Love It or Hate It is Love Hurts, which is currently in theaters and is, I would say, very bad. It is an action romance, and the action scenes are good. It has Ki-Hee Kwan as the lead, and really the fight sequences, great, no notes, good time. The script of the movie is absolutely heinous. It's about a like real estate agent who used to be an assassin who's being drawn out of his like sort of new fake life because his because his ex-girlfriend who he was supposed to kill he didn't kill, and now she's coming back to somehow like kind of haunt him, and that is played by Ariana DeBose. So it is a sort of romance between Ki-Hee Kwan and Ariana DeBose, which is apart in age, but it is weird to watch. And then and then just like all of the script points like don't make any sense. It's very convoluted. There's way too many characters. It's just a mild disaster. But there is a scene where someone gets the pointed boba straw, where someone gets killed with one of those. So that's fun. But aside from that, I would say Love Hurts, not good. Definitely a skip.
Did you see Heart Eyes?
I didn't. I haven't seen that yet. I watched, instead I went to, so I got a membership to IFC this year, because I was like, I want to try to watch more sort of like old stuff or more indie stuff. And so this weekend I went and saw Paddington in Peru, like the family screening that I got invited to, and then at Hanging Rock, which is this Australian movie from like the 70s that was bad. So would not recommend that. It was very
70s was a dark time.
Well, I feel like January was hitting so hard with the movies.
The 70s.
Like, the 70s. The 70s can be a little rough. The problem was it was just like too vibey and there was no plot. Like the entire plot could have been condensed into 5 minutes, and it was a lot of like whispering and sort of like staring at each other. Yeah, it is my favorite.
It's literally your favorite thing.
No. Okay.
You love a summer in Italy doing absolutely jack shit.
Okay, yes. Okay, but here's the difference. Here's the difference. I like a movie where nobody is doing things, but there's a lot of talking involved.
Okay.
I don't love a movie that like is because the plot of this movie is that this group of girls from this girls' school in Australia goes to visit this like rock formation that's sort of out in the middle of nowhere, and three of the girls like climb up the rock and then disappear, and so does one of their teachers, and then they never find these women. And so it should be a sort of mystery and interesting in like a whodunit kind of way, but you never get any answers as to what happened, I think, because it's based on a true story, maybe. And and then it also just like drags and drags and drags, but it's not like a slice of life movie, because it's these it's like a mystery, but then the mystery is just never solved. Yeah, so where something like After Sun, like, yeah, nothing happens in it. It's just like a girl and her dad on vacation. But like, there's a lot of feelings and emotion and stuff.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, what about Paddington in Peru? Was that good?
Paddington in Peru. Wait, this is based on a novel, and Paddington? I don't. No, Hanging Rock. It's like based on a novel, okay. And I'm like, why? And like, if it's not even real, then why don't they give us the result?
Well, maybe because it's just sometimes stories aren't solved. Sometimes things just don't happen. Sometimes you just have to live with the unlivable.
Okay, sure, whatever. I guess. Bad movie. Paddington in Peru, I would say, is good. Enjoyed it. It's very cute. I don't necessarily think it packs like the punch that Paddington 2 did, but Antonio Banderas is very fun in it. Olivia Colman is very fun in it. All of the, you know, regular people are great. And yeah, I didn't realize that Paddington was from Peru.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, your ignorance. Oh, my God.
But apparently he is. So
yeah.
yes, the mom is recast. It's Emily Mortimer instead of Sally Hawkins. But I was kind of like, okay, whatever. I was trying not to be too put out by that fact.
Yeah, I'm so brave, so proud of you.
Yeah, so that was good. That was good. I again cannot say whether or not it'd be a suitable movie to take a child to after the debacle that was Flo.
We're going to it. So she's watched the other Paddingtons and we're on board.
Have you watched Flo yet? Has she seen Flo? Has anyone seen Flo? I think Flo Flo is going to a streaming service. I feel like I saw a headline about this. Flo streaming. Oh yes, it's going to Max on the 14th, so you can watch it this weekend, Shelby.
Okay, perfect.
And it's like 80 some minutes.
Yeah. Great.
No talking, just a cat.
Just a cat.
A terrifying cat.
A terrified cat. So it was my daughter's an empath. I don't know what you want me to say.
Kill me. Okay. Speaking of empaths, we're going to be discussing Dennis Quaid on our Thursday episode. Shelby has finally watched The Substance at long last. God. So even though
this
is currently about 5 months after this was released, we will be discussing it. Will I remember the major plot points? Unclear, but...
Is there? Yeah, I mean,
when has that stopped us before?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all for listening, and go Birds, and we will see you on Thursday. Bye.